Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 12, 2012, episode 314, sponsored today by EasySignsOnline.com. Good morning, Horse World.
Good morning.
It's Thursday.
Kick the tires and light the fires, Big Daddy.
Your presence is required on the command deck.
Okay, are you ready? If I have ever deserved to be called Superman, it is on a day like today. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday, as of 4 p.m., my time, which is Mountain Standard Time, I would like for you to post on Facebook, Jennifer, if you please, what I received. I screamed at the top of my lungs, and then I almost threw up at the same time. And then a strange sense of pride filled up my soul. It was at this moment, at my time, Mountain Standard, that I reached down into the ground to pull up one of my traps that had, for the first time ever, a dead gopher! Just let me enjoy this one more second here. Hold on. Let's see.
Okay.
I want to play.
All right.
There we go.
Attach the sound file to the picture. I really do.
I know. I'm seeing the picture here. You got one of the little rodents, huh? After all this time, you finally caught one. Oh, did we lose her?
I think Jamie left the room.
Oh, we lost her.
She just took off to leap a tall building.
Well, there is a picture right there on Facebook of Jamie's little gopher trophy in a funny-looking trap. That's a funny-looking gizmo, isn't it? I've never seen one of those before. But anyway, she'll be back here shortly, I'm sure, with more tales of superhuman strength. And in the meantime, let's go to Jennifer and find out what the serious stuff on today's show is going to be.
On today's Easy Signs Online Thursday edition, Diana Hosford of the Washington International Horse Show is here to talk about the world's first edible jump, which made its debut at the Washington International Horse Show this year. And we're going to hear about whether or not it was tasty and what flavor the icing was. And continuing with the rare and unusual theme, we're going to have some ladies from the, let me get it right, American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, which is a group of really science-weeny folks who do research on breeds of livestock that are dwindling in numbers and how to protect their populations and their genetic diversity. It's going to be a really cool conversation. And last but not least, it's Wednesday. It's Thursday. Yes, it's Thursday. Lisa Slade from the Chronicle will be here, and we're going to do World Equestrian Festival 101. There's a lot going on in Florida this time of year, and it gets a little confusing who's doing what and where. So we're going to have all that coming up for you, so stay tuned.
Thank you, Jennifer. Are you back there, Jamie?
I'm back here. Better. So, yeah, I got my first gopher. I've been putting these stupid traps out for, like, 6 months. 6 months, and you have to, like, dig into the ground and, like, put it down into the ground and cover it up in this very specific way, and I've been doing it for 6 months. And every once in a while, I'll go back and just check them. Well, I had put this one in this morning, or yesterday morning, and I went back 3 hours later, and for the first time ever, I got one.
Woohoo! Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Now, the gopher killing dude that came out, the professional gopher killing dude, said there might be thousands. So this is one step.
One small step.
As Robert Dunn made me aware, because I posted this picture on my Facebook page, he said, oh, don't worry, one down, 364,822 more to go. That's okay, though. I have the evidence, the dead body. Chad was so excited when he came home. Oh, it was great.
You have a celebratory dinner. And
yeah, you were excited and kind of repulsed all at the same time. I know you well enough to know that.
Well, I literally pulled it out of the ground, and I had to scream. Like, I mean, because I wasn't expecting it. I've reached into the ground and pulled these things out a million times, and they're always full of dirt. The gophers stuff dirt in there and trip it. So they know what's going on, and I finally got one. So I would like to send what I really need to do is to get the address for the head of the Gopher Coalition, because I would like to send the head, the crushed skull of his gopher, in the mail, maybe on a stick. I'll send it to the Gopher Coalition, and they can just suck it.
That's funny. Well, congratulations, Jamie. I know that's a happy day for you over there in Arizona. Well, my daily winnie goes to a woman who I'm going to apologize right now because I'm going to mess up both her names probably. And I think she might be a new poster onto Facebook. Who, remember, we had the little competition going yesterday between you and the listeners about who could post the cutest baby pictures, animal baby pictures?
Yes.
Well, you posted a giraffe, and then somebody else posted a little foal in a little feed bucket, and then there was donkeys and all that stuff. Well, I got to tell you that I think is it Margot Ann or Margone Eakins or Akins? See, I'm not sure how to say either one of her names, but you get the hint. She wins because she posted a picture of a baby giraffe with mommy kissing him on the head. I mean,
you just can't
do any better than that one. That was pretty cute. Oh, pretty
she wins. Cute. I mean, I had baby giraffe pictures, but I didn't have mom kissing baby giraffe. I had some weird guy that was bottle feeding it. So she definitely wins. Way to go.
Yes, definitely wins. No question about it. So congratulations to, I'm going with Margot Ann, just because it sounds pretty.
I like that. My daily Winnie is going to go, you know, I've talked about myself enough now, my murderous ways to not give myself the daily Winnie, but if we were going to get down to the bottom of it, I in my heart, I feel like I deserve it, but I'm going to give it to somebody else. my daily Winnie goes out to a woman named Susan Kane, and she's not listening, nor will she probably ever. We would like to get her on the show. She is the executive producer of an award-winning equine lifestyle TV series called Unbridled. Again, it is on HRTV, something that I don't get in my cable, but HRTV is doing a show. They have a show called Thorough Talent. And it is going to be presented, let's see, it's a basically a TV show that has been on for quite some time, and they're going to do a segment within the show Unbridled, and it's going to showcase the talents of off-the-track thoroughbreds and the heartwarming stories that surround them. So if you have an off-the-track thoroughbred that is, you know, I don't know, could be like my event horse, or you have an off-the-track thoroughbred that's just your trail pony, or there's some great story, they actually are looking for submissions. You could be famous. You and your horse, off-the-track thoroughbred. A whole TV show about them. I love it. Submissions for the 2012 season of Unbridled start to be accepted, well, a couple days ago, January 10th, all the way through the end of the month. So you've got until January 31st to send your story to thoroughtalent@unbridledtv.com. So definitely, if you have an OTTV and you've got a great story, thoroughtalent@unbridledtv.com.
Okay, cool. That sounds like fun. We'll try and find out more about that as time goes on here. All right, we have our first, well, let me see here. Jennifer, do we have our first guest on the line? Or no? Okay, good. Well, while we're waiting for them, I have another story here, too. And everybody knows that we cover a good bit in the racing world, and one of the things we keep an eye on is we keep an eye on Keeneland sales. And the Keeneland sales right now are going on right now. They're the January sales they have every year. And I am happy to report, the reason we keep an eye on them is because they sort of give us an indicator of how the economy is going in the horse world, because it's all the trickle-down theory. You know, what starts at the high end of the horse racing world usually trickles down. So that's why we try and keep an eye on this for you. And right now at Keeneland, just a couple miles from my house, the second day of the sale, the market continued strong on Tuesday, as gross receipts were $30 million for the opening 2 days of Keeneland's January Horses of All Ages sale, exceeding total sales. Get this, Jamie. It exceeded the total sales of $25 million for all 5 days of last year's auction. So in just 2 days, they have now exceeded the five-day total from last year. So that's a very good indicator that people are willing to spend a little bit more money again on the horses for this year. And I think that's going to be a good sign, in racing at least, of things to come during 2012. Also, the median horse rose from $20,000 to $30,000, and they sold a total of 487 horses. So that's good news from Keeneland so far.
That's up really big. I mean, it's like a quarter up, you know. So I think what has also happened is because so many people decided to, you know, not breed horses last year and the year before and the last couple years, there's less horses, so everybody is spending more. I mean, it's the whole, you know, that's the way the economy works, is less. If you have less, they go for more. It's checks and balances, like.
What I hope we don't see again is a whole glut in breeding, you know, where we overbreed again like we did a couple of years ago. So hopefully that won't happen, and we can maintain here a little bit before we see a flood in the market of babies again, which is what is ending up causing the problem, the problems that we have now that we've discussed endlessly on the show. So,
yeah.
All right, we're going to get to our first guest right now. This is just kind of fun. I got this press release yesterday, and I got a hold of Diana. And I said, Diana, you have to come on the show and tell us about this. I didn't even realize this was happening at the time, and I think this happened some time ago, but the TV show's just coming on now. So we have Diana Hosford, Director of Marketing and Community Relations for the Washington International Horse Show. Good morning, Diana.
Good morning, Glenn and Jamie. Thanks so much for having me on this morning.
Well, you're talking a ton of cake. How could I not have you on?
Oh, lots of cake. It was a really sweet night for us at the Washington International Horse Show.
Now, this was over when you had your show in, what is it, November? I'm trying to remember.
October, now. The end of October.
October. So this happened in October, but the TV show version of this is just coming out now. So tell us what happened, because I think it's going to be cool.
It's going to be great. It was very exciting. We've been partners with Discovery Channel. Our marketing and communications team really works closely with them, and the Georgetown Cupcake Group has been a sponsor of ours since 2009. giving cupcakes to our champions, which has always been great. People love to get that pink box of sweet treats. And when the Georgetown Cupcakes started to have a reality show on TLC, who is part of the Discovery Channel umbrella, we started thinking of creative ways that we might be able to work with them further. And the and part of their reality show is building these large-scale cupcakes creations. And so we thought a jump would be great. And so we made the request, and they did it.
So what did they do? They actually made a jump out of cupcakes?
They made a jump out of cupcakes. 2,000 cupcakes, vanilla cupcakes with pink buttercream frosting, was part of the Gambler's Choice, and it was a super fun time. The Gambler's Choice is a costume class, and it was very exciting. People really took advantage of our sweet jump in the middle of the ring.
So did you get extra points as a rider if you could grab a bite on the way by?
No. Although you'll have to wait and see if it made if that happened. If it's a part of the show.
But now this is one big. I'm looking at a picture of it. This is one big pile of what looks like a jump standard, full of cupcakes, and they're pink, so of course they really stand out.
Yeah.
Were they edible? I mean, they were real cupcakes.
They were real cupcakes. All the creations that they make for their reality show DC Cupcakes on TLC are edible. And you'll probably see in the show on Monday night, our fans took full advantage of the edible jump. They all were invited down to take a look and have a taste after the class.
Oh, now were they covered in dirt and sand from the horses jumping the cupcakes?
I think some of them probably were, and those may have gotten eaten or may not. I'm not sure. There was quite a crowd around the jump after the class. Well, you know, lots of people taking pictures, and you know, obviously the crews who were shooting the show were there as well. So I'm not sure, but they were devoured.
Well, it's a very pretty jump. We've seen some pictures. I do have to know, though, that as far as what they actually jumped, was there wood inside the cupcake jump? I mean, what were the poles? How'd that work?
The poles were basic poles, and the cupcake, the standards were what were decorated. We weren't going to put cupcakes on the poles or the rails. It was pretty much the standards, and it was the Joker jump, so it was the most points, and it was optional.
Okay, gotcha. I was like, that would be a great way to keep track of who rubbed it. You know, they rub the fence, they wipe out a couple cupcakes.
You know, that might be a good idea for the puissants next year.
Exactly. That's total puissants. My God, that's perfect. Okay,
I really like that because you never know who might just skim over the top. Covered in pink frosting.
you'll be busted. I mean, there's no way for you not to be able to tell. You'll have pink icing on you. It's perfect. Sign me up.
Absolutely.
Well, this is terrific. Now, is this the first time we know about that an edible jump has ever been used?
You know, I don't know that for a fact. If it's the
well,
first
let,
time...
Well, let me rephrase that. A human edible jump, because we have used hay bales many times for jumps.
Right.
Yeah, we could consider them edible.
Right, and flowers and corn and things like that. You know, to my knowledge, I certainly am not an expert in edible jumps. You know, across the world, but to my knowledge, this is probably the sweetest jump, and it was so fun for everybody. You know, our show managers, you know, our world class show managers, David Disler and Robert Ridlin, and they are used to dealing with you know the course and the way the course is designed and the riders and all of the elements of the show, the footing, but an edible jump was something different. And they were wonderful, and being able to incorporate it in a really fun way.
Well, this is great. I think it's terrific. And you guys have been doing a great job. I know we've talked to you in the past here on the shows from the Washington International Horse Show. You're doing a great job of really trying to make a horse show fun for non-horsey people to come in and watch it by doing all kinds of different things now. And I congratulate you for that, for really trying to make it accessible to non-horse people.
You know, thank you so much for saying that. It's one of the things we've really strived for, you know, being the leading indoor urban horse show, hunter jumper show in the nation, you know, is an honor for us. And there are also, you know, challenges. We are in the middle of the city, in the Penn Quarter in Washington, D.C. You walk out of the building and you can catch a cab, go grab a five-star dinner, or, you know, take a cab to the theater or even, you know, trek over to the White House. And for us, wanting to engage not only the equestrian community, but the local community is really important as well. So we've built partnerships with the military, which have been really wonderful, obviously building local partnerships. The Georgetown Cupcake Shop is just blocks from our office, which can be a little bit dangerous at times. And various other things that have been, you know, special for us. We partnered with Smithsonian this year. One of the elements that's important to us as a show is obviously maintaining the integrity of holding, you know, a high-level equestrian event, but also engaging the community and making sure that we're reaching out to other people so that we can continue to grow and thrive.
Well, I think it's terrific. Congratulations. We'll have you on again before we come up to the Washington International Horse Show again next fall. But this is terrific. It's DC Cupcakes is the name of the show. It is on TLC, and it's January 16th at 10 p.m. Eastern time. Check your local listings for your time. But so it's January the 16th, which is, I believe, Monday night?
Yeah.
All right, so Monday night, January 16th, check it out, see a little bit about the horse show and a lot about 1 ton worth of cupcakes.
Thanks so much for having me. And when you guys come up here, we'll be sure to save you some cupcakes that haven't been jumped over.
Okay, good. I appreciate that. Yeah, that gritty, sandy stuff might not be too good. But I'm looking forward to it. We'll look forward to seeing you up there. Thank you, Diana.
Thanks so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, there, that'll give you cavities just looking at those pictures. Maybe Jennifer can post one of the pictures of the jumps that people will see on Monday night.
Yeah, that is like your dream come true. That would make you be a jumper. That's the only thing, is a jump made out of food.
Well, did you see what I posted yesterday, that Twinkies is going bankrupt?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Well, this is the second time Hostess, actually. Hostess also does Wonder Bread. It's every kid in the world that's our age knew Wonder Bread because we used to have Wonder Bread all the time. That was in the days when they didn't make funny, fancy breads. They only had white bread. You know, we ate white bread. That was it. And they're also the maker of Twinkies and a couple others, that Ho-Hos, that people will recognize and probably still eat. But this is the second time they're filing for bankruptcy, and they're not sure. They were in bankruptcy protection from 2004 to 2009. And then they're filing bankruptcy again. So I don't know whether they're going to make it through this one or not. It all depends. So you could see the end of Twinkies.
Okay.
That wasn't my favorite anyway. You know, we talked about it on the show. I'm a Tasty Cake fan. I love Tasty Cakes. I'm not so much a Twinkie fan.
Well, I had no idea what Tasty Cakes were, but I do know what a Twinkie is. Now, I want to know, what are the snack cakes that are affected? Because I'm not a big snack cake person. But so I don't really know what is theirs.
Well, theirs would be, of course, Wonder Bread, the white bread. Everybody knows that. That's lived anywhere on the East Coast, at least. Also, Chocodiles, Donettes, Ho-Hos. You might have heard of Ho-Hos. Twinkies. I'm trying to think of what other ones would be theirs. I think that was about it for the popular ones of theirs.
Zebra cakes,
Twinkies,
I think?
The most popular. What's that?
Are zebra cakes a Hostess?
I don't know. But we had a lot of comments on there yesterday of other things that people are favorites of people. And Butterscotch Crippets, those are also a Tasty Cake, was a favorite. Ring Dings and Devil Dogs. Two of my old-time favorites, Ring Dings and Devil Dogs. Snowballs, there was another favorite of everybody. And then zebra cakes. Of course, Dominique Ferrero, our friend who has all the zebras and wild animals, said she likes zebra cakes the best.
Well, they've got the Hostess Twinkies, Cupcakes, Ho-Hos, Susie Q's, Ding Dongs. Are those Ding Dongs the like cupcake-looking thing with the chocolate on top?
Oh, they have Ding Dongs? Really?
Ding Dongs, Donettes, Mini Muffins, Fruit Pies, Snowballs. They make those 100-calorie packs, Smart Bakes, and Zingers. Why, at the end of this, all this crap that they make, and they're like, oh, and then we're going to make Smart Bakes. Whatever. That's got to be just as bad for you.
That's funny. All right, so that was the big news in the snack cake world. Of course, we always talk about food here because I love food. That's my favorite topic. But one of our other favorite topics is EasySignsOnline.com, and you can visit our friends at EasySignsOnline.com and browse their unique website to see their many custom sign options and styles. Their step-by-step ordering process allows you to choose your sign options and to see all the pricing up front. They had a few quotes that they wanted to share from recent customers. One of their customers said, "We received our new sign. Thank you so very much. The colors are beautiful. You have proven that your company has the highest quality and integrity, and you truly want the finest for your customers. Customer service like yours is extremely rare in any industry. You can be sure that we will come to you for all of our future sign needs, and we will have a number of them in the future." Another quote from a different customer, "Wayne, I just wanted to let you know that the signs that I ordered came in today a day early. So thank you very much. You were most helpful, and the signs look amazing. Very impressed. They ship to every state in the United States, so take advantage of their current free shipping promotion, and you can find it all at EasySignsOnline.com. That's EasySignsOnline.com. And, of course, Jamie's sign is from there. All of the banners that we use at shows are from there. So we have personal experience with Easy Signs Online, and they do a terrific job. Now, the Gophers have eaten Jamie's sign, but that's a different story altogether.
It is. I'm still looking at the crap Hostess makes. I think it's okay if they go out of business. Who eats a ho-ho? Ho, you know what a ho-ho is?
God, you have no taste in good stuff, Jamie. Good stuff. Bringing.
Ho-ho. As long as they're not Double nutty thought. Buddies. They don't make Nutty Buddies, do they? I do love some Nutty Buddies and Star Crunch. Those are my two snack cake weaknesses. But thank God they're not going out of business. I would have to stock up and freeze them. Bury them underground. Come back and get them. Well, the Gophers would get them, so never mind.
All right, our guests are ready. If you want to go to our guests today.
Well, that's great. Yeah, today is one of the days that, fortunately, we had a 9:15, and now we've got our next guest. And this is something we're gonna educate a little bit because I don't know a lot about what the ALBC is. So Jennifer is on here, and Jeanette, is that correct? Jennifer and Jeanette, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. Sorry, it took me so long. I was looking through the thing, try to find both of your names. So, Jennifer, why don't you tell us what you do, and then Jeanette, you go next.
Sure. So ALBC actually stands for the American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. It's a long name, but in short, what we do is we work to preserve or conserve rare breeds of livestock and poultry, and including equines.
And what is your position at the ALBC?
I am actually the Marketing and Communications Director.
Okay, and Jeanette, what do you do for the ALBC?
Well, I do all kinds of things. I'm Research and Technical Programs Manager, and I'm basically a field person, and I also do a lot of technical writing. I think I have one of the best jobs because I get to go out and mess with the animals. But I do a lot of things. I do anything from discovery, where you go out and take a look at populations of animals to determine if they're unique and something that needs conservation. I do a lot of assisting with producers that want to become better breeders or better educated about their animals. A lot of times I talk with newcomers that are interested in finding a breed that would work for them, and so walk them through the process of figuring out which breed's going to work best, and do a lot of writing for magazines and different articles that are published all over, do quite a bit of photography. And, you know, day to day, each day is different. So it's a pretty cool job.
That sounds like an amazing job. I mean, you go through different, I mean, it sounds like you would travel a lot and go look at horses. So that doesn't sound too bad at all.
Yeah.
Now, I'm looking here at what you guys actually talk about, you know, what you kind of take care of. And it's not just horses, and I heard you mention chickens. It's, well, you have it listed as asses, donkeys, cattle, goats, horses, pigs, rabbits, sheep. And so these are all things, and you've got on your website, which is albc-usa.org, all the different breeds. And I'm looking here through the horses that are in critical, and then you've got the threatened horses, the horses on the watch list, and horses that are recovering. Now, on the recovering list is the Belgian, Glenn's going to love this, the Belgian, the Percheron, and the Frisian, all, you know, pretty well-known driving breeds. So what was the thing that happened with those three breeds to help them recover?
Well, you know, these breeds have gained a lot of popularity, whereas some others have declined. You know, they're some of the favored driving horses. And so, you know, if there's a market, people will breed. And so their numbers have maintained pretty well. It's breeds like the Suffolk Punch that really don't have a strong place within the driving community, but their strength is they still have the old body type for farm work, so they're really, really popular with people that want to have horse-drawn machines or horsepower on the farm, but they're not very leggy or flashy or showy for the show ring. The show ring, I think, really has been the saving grace for the other draft breeds. But overall, draft breeds are a real challenge because they're so much more expensive to take care of. They're going to eat more. You know, they really are not as easy keepers as, say, a little Shetland pony or some
right.
of these colonial Spanish horses. So you have to be really dedicated to get into draft horses, and it's you know, I mean, they're amazing animals, and standing next to one, you know, it's a pretty exciting experience, even for someone that hangs around horses a lot. But I think the show ring's probably the number one reason those breeds do better.
Yeah, because I mean, you certainly see Frisians at any type of show now, and Belgian crosses and all that. So I think that's great. How does a breed, Jennifer, how does a breed get on the list? Like, because I was just reading an article about a Scottish herd and the Skyrian or Skyrian breed of horse that is almost extinct, and I noticed it's not on your list. So how does that breed of horse get on your list?
Yeah, so there's a couple of different criteria for making our conservation priority list. One of those is that we're really concerned about breeds that have been in the U.S. prior to 1925. We do deal with some global breeds, but typically they're globally rare when we work with them. So that might be a reason why
they're on the Greek islands and stuff. There's very few of them left, but yeah, they're definitely not from the United States. I don't think any here.
We also, you know, we want it to be a true breed, meaning that it breeds true when you mate two together, that you get offspring that's genetically pure. And then the main thing for us is census numbers. We work with breed associations, we work with breeders to actually find out how many horses there are in the country. We also work with international partners to find out how many horses there are globally. It's definitely a challenging process. But we try to keep track of, you know, how many horses are out there, how many breeding animals are out there, and that's how we come up with that list. And there's different criteria based on the species, but one example, I think, for horses, let's see, if they're in the critical category, it means that there's 200 annual registrations or fewer in the U.S., and it means that their global population is less than 2,000 breeding animals. So that's kind of on the critical end, and then it goes up from there.
Okay, so 2,000 or less. Now, I had no idea. I mean, there's some breeds that are on this critical list that sound very common to me. You know, the type of horses that I've heard about, the Cleveland Bay, the Shires, the Hackney horse. We've actually had them on the show to talk about it. But then there's breeds on this critical list that I have never I mean, I grew up with the horse books and the horse posters with all the different breeds, and never once did I ever hear of a Belsky or a Banker or a Servat or a Santa Cruz, a New Mexico, a Sulphur, a Wilbur. What are these breeds, and where did they come from? How come they're not more popular?
Well, these are breeds that have developed from the stock that was originally brought over by the Spaniards during the colonization of America. And many of these breeds have been isolated or largely isolated, you know, for hundreds of years. Like the Marsh Tackie, that population of horses has been in the low country of South Carolina for about 400 years. And they've become a breed unto themselves, and you know, but people outside of the low country have never heard of a Marsh Tackie, but you know, in their section of the country, they're the ultimate hunting horse. I mean, you don't go hunting in the low country on just any old horse, cuz it's swampy, it's hot, it's humid, and you know, the briars are terrible. I mean, it's pretty rough country out there, but these horses have been adapting to that environment for 400 years, and so they're really, they can get into places that ATVs certainly couldn't, and so that's what's kept them around for so long. With the Wilbur Cruz horses, those were horses that were brought up from Mexico in the 1800s, and or even earlier than that. And they were developed as ranch horses, but they're still very Spanish in type and genetically distinct. With the Banker horses, that's another population on the East Coast that were isolated along the Outer Banks of North Carolina. And the interesting thing is, you know, in doing DNA studies of all these horses, they really are true Spanish horses, and they represent a snapshot of the golden age of horse breeding in Spain that the Spanish don't have anymore. And so the Spanish are actually quite excited working with us with these horses, and also Spanish cattle and goats and sheep. A lot of these animals that we have here in the U.S. are still very much, you know, Spanish, and something that they want to make sure sticks around as well. So these populations by themselves are small. Like with the Marsh Tackies, we just crossed the 250 mark. And the Bankers, they're probably about that many. Some of the horses do better than others number-wise. Florida Crackers are probably more than that. But that's probably why you haven't heard of them, is because they were, you know, small pockets of horses that were isolated and very particular to one spot in the country. And one of my favorite ones, the Santa Cruz horses, were brought up from Mexico in the 1800s to be ranch horses on Santa Cruz Island. And when we did the DNA samples, they were still very much Spanish. And their closest relatives were Peruvian and Colombian Pasofinos. And so they're kind of interesting in that the genetics that they came from come from, you know, further south in Latin America, and, you know, evolved separately from some of these others. And the Santa Cruz horses, we've probably only got about 45 of those. But little by little, we're gaining and getting some new breeders for that particular horse. But when you look at them, they look like little Pasos. They're really pretty, pretty gated horses that are rough and tumble, real nice horses.
Now, I kind of remember that Williamsburg was working at keeping some rare species there. Do you work with them at all?
Yeah, we do. Matter of fact, their farm manager has been on our board a couple times, Elaine Shirley. Currently, I believe they're working with Canadian horses, and they were working with American Creams. I'm not sure if they still have American Creams there, but I know they still work with Canadian horses, And those are, you know, utilized there because of the rich history that that breed has and the influence of that breed on other American breeds like the Morgan or some of the saddlebreds. The Canadian, you know, way, way back in the day could have had some influence in those.
Yeah, I kind of remembered that. Now, before we get too much further down the line, you also do, obviously, other livestock, and some of that is, are chickens, and Jamie and Jennifer are both chicken lovers. So there are breeds that we keep that close on the genetics of breeds of chickens as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Majority of our work these days seems to be chickens because of the incredible urban chicken movement that's got people thinking about chickens and wanting to have their own eggs. And it's been amazing how popular chickens have become within the past decade.
I know a lot of towns now are saying you're allowed to have chickens again. You know, you still can't have goats or cows or sheep, but you're allowed to have chickens.
Yeah, you know, I mean, chickens are a friend of ours had once said that chickens are the gateway drug to other breeds and species. And, you know, once you get into chickens, then, you know, well, it'd be nice to have a pig or a goat and, you know, then, oh, maybe a horse, and, you know, but a lot of folks get started with the chickens. And you know, they're quite pleasant to have around. They make great pets, but they're also, they earn their keep. You know, my chickens, I get eggs from them, meat from them, but a big part of what they do for us is churning the compost and, you know, helping us with the fertility in our garden. And so, you know, they're not just pets on my place. They earn their keep for sure.
Oh, well, not only the, let's not forget the millions of eggs they lay everywhere.
Yeah.
You can't see it all of. Jamie, do you still have chickens?
I do. I have my three girls, and since we've moved to this place, we have three now. And, it, you know, maybe this is a side topic, but oh, I swear I bought some bum chickens. Only one of mine lays eggs. Or the other ones are laying them, I don't know, in piles of leaves. I can't find them. They're pretty worthless. Like, mine don't work for a living. Mine just eat and let me pet them. That's pretty much it.
Well, their productivity is during a very short lifespan. Like, most people don't realize that the chickens lay most of their eggs before the age of three, and then after, you know, they're 3 years old, their production goes way, way down. And you know, I've got some Leghorns, which are some of the best layers in the world, but my girls are now coming up on five, and I haven't seen an egg in months.
What kind of chicken is that? Because I'm going to find it.
Leghorn. At my place, we keep silver Leghorns. The nursery uses the white Leghorns and white Leghorn crosses for a lot of white egg laying in commercial. But ours are the non-industrial, traditional type of Leghorn.
Okay. I'll have to get that kind of. And now you've just basically let me know that I got some old-ass chickens.
Yeah.
That's fine.
You know, when they get up, you know, around 6 years old, that's pretty darn old for a chicken.
And
all right.
Well, feel free to give us a call. I mean, that's part of our job is that we provide this kind of information. I mean, you can call us anytime and talk chickens, horses, cattle, sheep, goats, and we can help you pick out, you know, chickens that'll be good for your environment and for your needs, whether you're looking for eggs or meat or feathers or friends or whatever you're looking for.
No kidding. So I don't have to Google everything and try to filter through yet good and bad information. I can just call the ALBC. The American Livestock Breeds Conservancy, and talk to y'all and kind of get some ideas. Jennifer, I was a little surprised when I was looking at your list of horses that are threatened to see the Lipizzan breed. How are they not more popular? You know, to me it seems like there's less, so they're more expensive. Is that prohibitive of owning or breeding a Lipizzan? What's the deal with that?
Well, I think it's a number of reasons. You know, I mean, everybody knows what a Lipizzan is, but it you know they're a higher priced horse from what I understand. But, you know, there are fewer and fewer people that are willing to be breeders, you know, of these breeds that don't have a huge market. And so, you know, that might be what's kind of held them back. I mean, when you're going for a trail ride, you don't automatically think, oh, I'll take my Lipizzan and go trail riding or something like that. You know,
oh, my God, I would.
I'd take my Marsh Tacky with me. But,
right.
You know, it's a lot of it is the niche and, again, the market for these animals. If you don't have market, then, you know, these animals are not going to be bred and as much as some of the other breeds. I know, like, Friesians, for instance, are really in vogue, as are, like, Gypsy Vanners. You know, there are a lot of people trying to breed those. And so, you know, their numbers are increasing and good, but that's going to take away from another breed. So it's all about market.
Great. And Jennifer, do you guys do certain things to promote chicken breeds or horse breeds or something like that that you want to try to, you know, make more exciting to people?
Yeah, so that's kind of one of our primary roles is really to do promotion. I know, like you said, a lot of the horse breeds on our list you've never even heard of. And so part of what we do through our website, through our newsletter, through our e-newsletter, we go to national events, international events, is really trying to spread the word about what we do and then the stories behind a lot of these breeds. We have over, I think it's over 183 breeds on our list, and they all have really unique histories, stories that go along with them. And so part of what we're trying to do is really spread that awareness, spread that information so that people know that these breeds are out there and will help us in the fight to conserve them.
Well, yeah, I think what you guys are doing, I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, one of the successful campaigns we've had with one of the breeds is with the Marsh Tackies. And to help promote the breed, we were part of getting this breed named the Heritage Horse of South Carolina. We've been involved with revitalizing beach races with these horses. Historically, they used to go out and race them on the beach on Saturday nights up until they built the bridge to Hilton Head. And, you know, we thought, wouldn't it be cool to bring that back and bring attention? And now it's become an annual event. And last year we had maybe 8,000 or 9,000 people show up to watch these, you know, a dozen horses run a race on a beach. But it's done a tremendous amount of good for the breed. And, you know, there are other things like that that we're able to do with breeds to bring attention to them. And our ultimate goal is to find a way to develop a sustainable market for these horses. I don't think any of them are going to ever compete with the popularity of quarter horses or thoroughbreds or what have you. But if we can find a sustainable market for them where, you know, their numbers can be level or improve a bit, then that would be our ultimate goal. But, you know, we make no qualms that, you know, we can compete with some of the more popular breeds. But, you know, just having a niche that can help these breeds survive is where we're really heading towards.
Well, I think it's great. I think what you guys are doing should be applauded. I think that it's very necessary, and I'm glad that there's somebody out there doing it. And if we can do anything to help, you know, obviously, just keep us in the loop here. But I want to go ahead and post on our Facebook page your website, because it's really interesting reading. I mean, there's history of these breeds. Every single one of these breeds you click on, it takes you to another link. It gives you the history of it, the whole standards of the horse, and it's just really interesting. So ALBC-USA.org is the website. That's American Livestock Breeds Conservancy. And definitely check it out. I mean, I'm going to go click on a bunch of chickens and see what there is. And there's also ducks and turkeys and any kind of animal that you would be interested in. They've got them on the ALBC-USA.org. Check it out. And Jennifer and Jeanette, thank you both so much for coming on the show and sharing with us your unbelievable information.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks. It's our pleasure.
And we'll talk to y'all again soon, I'm sure.
All righty.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
How fascinating.
Yeah, that is cool stuff. I mean, there's so many that you're right on that list that I had never heard of before. Some of them I've heard of. I had heard of the Marsh Techies because I think we did a show on them years ago. And I think Alan knew a little bit about them because he lives down there where those horses exist. So, yeah, cool stuff. Now, I kind of read the
horses
a dilemma
on the beach.
What a dilemma. Because, you know, they mentioned Pasofino. So now do I play the Pasofino song that you love so much, or do I do a Templeton Thompson song?
Templeton Thompson. I don't think anybody said Pasofino. Nobody said that. I didn't hear that come up at all.
As soon as she said Pasofino, I went, yes!
Don't do it!
No, I'm not going to do it to you. Actually, I had picked out a song today that sort of... it goes with your excitement that you had at the beginning of the show about coming up and actually killing one gopher. It goes along with that excitement, and you actually said the name of the song, and we're going to play it right after we talk about findajudge.com.
Is this the song? Is it?
No.
Okay, carry on. Sorry,
that wasn't it. I don't think we can call this mass genocide yet. It's more like sniper action than mass genocide at this point. But
you know
how
much more motivated I am, though? I am so motivated to stick these traps out. Oh, my gosh. 6 months, nothing. One, I'm like, I'm going to live out there with these traps. I'm going to just put it like a carrot underneath a box, you know, with a string attached and pull the string when they walk underneath. It's on. It is. I've been renewed and reinvigorated.
Well, that reminds me too. Speaking of renewed and reinvigorated, I need to talk about really bad ads for tomorrow. We'll do that after the song. Remind me. Findajudge.com, the free resource to help help you find people that work at your shows, whether you're doing a large show or a small horse show in your neighborhood or at your farm. There's always that thing where you have to figure out where to get a TD and where to get a judge and where to find all the people necessary to run a horse show. That's one of the hardest parts and one of the obstacles that you have to try and overcome when you actually run a horse show. So if you want to make that job easy, you go to findajudge.com. It's also the place, if you're a judge, to be listed or a horse show worker of some kind. You can get listed there. They have all disciplines, all types of shows, and you can just put in where you live, and it'll give you a list of judges in your area. So findajudge.com is the online directory of horse show staff. Check it out today. So this song, you said this earlier when you were talking about killing the poor little gophers. You said, I can do this.
It's gonna be hard. I can get through this, 'cause I've got the scars to prove I have before. I've been through this war, and I have survived. It's gonna take time. I've learned to live with everything that life has handed me. With you. What to do?
Okay, that was awesome.
That's your song.
That might be one of my favorite Templeton Thompson songs ever. What a fantastic song. Talking about I can do this, but I need him. I can kill him, but he's going to have to take him out of the trap.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you took him out of the trap.
Oh, hell no. It was so funny when we get home because Chad had been in this like huge flight yesterday, him along with 30 other planes. It was just this craziness. He lands and calls me. And it just so happened to be about 30 seconds after I screamed, my phone rang. And I was like, oh, my God, he heard me from the base. And he was like, I was like, how was the flight? And I said, I thought you were calling because you heard me scream. And then I tell him what happened. He was like, screw the flight. That's the best news I've heard all day. He's like, don't do anything with it. I can't wait to see it when I get home. I'm like, well, it's kind of starting to stink a little bit. It's dead, and it's probably been in there a couple hours, you know. He's like, just leave it there. I'll come and get it. So I had to pick, because the dogs would get it, I had to pick up this nasty-ass dead gopher that was in a trap. I took the picture for you and then put it on top of a trash can where when he got home, he was like a little kid, where is it? Where is it? Where is it? I want to see it. I want to see it. I want to see it. He flips over and he's like, look at the teeth. I'm like, I'm going to throw up again. And it really stunk. The whole thing was gross. But and then he's like, let's go eat. I don't know what is wrong with men.
Did you just see the picture Jennifer just posted? Jennifer, I don't know where you found that. Oh, my God.
Let me hit refresh here and see.
On Facebook. By the way, good morning, Robert.
Fantastic. Fantastic.
It's a picture of a squirrel unzipping his chest and pulling it open to reveal a Superman outfit. Hey, and I just discovered, too, that we missed a very important birthday today, and I have to do this. That happy birthday goes out to Reese Kaufler Stanfield, our good friend and regular guest here on the show. She has her birthday today, so happy birthday. I missed that one earlier. Sorry about that, Reese. Didn't mean to miss your birthday. Well, you are listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek. I am here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jen is over in the producer chair today. The Horse Radio Network show highlight today is the Driving Radio Show. It came out. It's now live, episode number 27. It's called Designing Marathon Courses and City Driving. We took a look at the USEF National Meeting just starting today. That's also happening right now. We talked about designing marathon courses with Mark Johnson, one of the course designers in the country that designed those complicated marathon courses that could teach the heck out of all drivers. And also, we did our first listener spotlight with Justin Harrison, who's also a listener to this show. And she did some driving over the holidays. She actually drove one of the carriages in Parker, Colorado. And we ended up in a neat discussion with her on the city carriage deal. The one, obviously, all the discussion in New York, and Jamie and I disagree on that, about whether there should be carriage horses in the city. So we actually had that discussion, too, because she had just got done working at one of those for a couple of months. Now, granted, Parker, Colorado is not as big as New York City. But the so it was fun. It was a good conversation. It was fun. And Mark Johnson, the guest there, he lives actually in Massachusetts at the neighboring farm to the Myopia Hunt Club, where Jennifer worked as manager for some time. And any eventer out there that knows anything about the history of eventing will know the farm that Mark Johnson lives on. And so can you tell me the name of the farm that eventing started on in the United States, Jamie? Can you tell me the name of that farm?
No, I cannot.
Ledyard. Ledyard Farm was where eventing started in Massachusetts. And Mark Johnson actually lives there. His wife's an eventer, and he's a driver. But they live on that historic property right there beside the Myopia Hunt Club in the North Shore of Massachusetts. So that was a fun show. You can catch it at horseradionetwork.com. Before we get to our guest, I have a story that is just unbelievable, and the guy is just crazy, or he was drunk, I'm not sure which. His name is Dustin Bruckard. He's 29 years old, and he's from St. Ignatius, Montana. Now, you can just picture St. Ignatius, Montana, a little town sort of like Norco, where everybody sort of rides their horses and they drive their buggy. Well, he happened to be driving by the Old Timer Cafe the other night, and he noticed that there was a horse and buggy tied to the fence by the Old Timer Cafe, and that the horse was carrying on and was about to break free. Well, sure enough, this horse broke free, went careening down the road with the buggy, crashed into three different cars, and that's when Dustin decided he needed to do something. So he told the driver, the SUV that he was in, to catch up to that horse. Now picture this. This is right out of an old West movie. He drives up. He gets out on the running boards of the car, hangs onto the roof, and makes a flying leap off the car into the buggy, reaches down, grabs the reins, and discovers that the guy had taken the bridle off and the horse was hooked up by a halter and he's pulling on nothing. So now he's on this carriage, which is careening down the road with the horse at a dead gallop with no reins and nothing to do anything with other than die eventually. So he decides that his only option, get this, Jamie, what would you do in a case like that?
Scream for Jesus and call
911.
He did the only thing that I guess you could do besides bail. Now, keep in mind, as I'm reading the story, my heart is palpitating because he is actually on a busy road heading towards the highway. Okay? Okay, he's heading towards the highway on a buggy in the back with no bridle on the horse because the horse had broken the bridle when he broke away from the tie-up area. And so, carry on. This is so scary.
So he did the only thing that he could possibly think to do. He jumped from the carriage onto the horse, was riding the horse. Now, keep in mind that most harnesses have a saddle that is pokey. It sticks, has saddle parts that stick up, has little things that stick up to hold the reins, little loops so that are made out of metal. So you can't jump all the way onto the horse where you would normally sit. You're going to be sitting a little back further. And he didn't have reins to yank on. He still had that problem. So what did he do? He grabbed an ear, and he said he yanked as hard as he could. Well, apparently it got the horse's attention, and the horse veered into a driveway. And he said he was trying to get the other ear and to stop her. As he reached for the right ear, she went left, and he went off. So he got dumped in the driveway, but it managed to slow the horse down and got the horse to the point where I guess he eventually stopped and the situation was over. By the way, midnight, the horse made it home healthier than this guy did, who went to the hospital with torn ligaments in his left knee and a potentially fractured ankle. But I have to give him this. I would not have had the guts to do that, and I know how to drive, and I would not have had the guts to do that. Would you have had the guts to jump out of a moving vehicle onto a carriage?
I would have, you know, honestly, I think what I would have done is go, hey, there's a loose horse, loose horse! That's what we all do. loose horse! I can't say that I would have, like, gone through all the stuff that he did. But I do think it's funny that everybody in the town is now comparing him to John Wayne. But in the end of every movie, John Wayne never fell off and never went to the hospital. Nor did he, John Wayne jump from a SUV onto a horse. So he's more of a modern day, I don't
Chuck
know.
Norris.
I don't mean, I
sounds like a Chuck Norris thing, doesn't it?
There he is, though.
That's a good one. But it also never said in the article what Dustin's blood alcohol count was. I'm kind of guessing that he'd had a few before he went jumping off the... But I could be wrong. We should find Dustin and get him on the show. You think Dustin, this guy, this John Wayne Chuck Norris guy from St. Ignatius, Montana, actually has a Facebook page? We should find out.
Oh, my God. We totally have to find him. I mean, what else do they have to do in St. Ignatius, Montana? Really?
I'm sure he has plenty of time to talk on the phone to us. That would be great. We ought to look for him. There's your story of the day. That's a rescue story to beat all rescue stories right there. Well, our next guest is Lisa. I'm so sorry to go to you so late, Lisa, but I had to tell that story. Would you have jumped off the SUV onto the moving carriage careening down the road?
No, heck no, I would not have. especially because once he got over there, he realized the horse wasn't even wearing a bit, and so he just had to grab its ear.
Just amazing. You know, only what I think, actually, this is a good question, though. Would horse people have done this, or would only non-horse people even attempt this? I think horse people, we know better. We're going, hey, no way in hell I'm jumping on that thing.
I also, you know, I just wouldn't trust my coordination. I think I would be just as likely to, you know, fall on the ground behind the carriage or fall off of the carriage.
I agree.
That would not be something I would attempt.
You know who would have done this, Jamie? Wendy, co-host of the driving radio show. She so would have done this. She would have done it in a minute. I could see her doing it. All right, Lisa. Lisa is with the Chronicle of the Horse here for Thursday's Chronicle Report. Good morning, Lisa.
Good morning.
I'm so glad you could be here. Now,
you're
talking about, I got to ask you, because I get so confused. There's all these circuits that go on in Florida, and there's the West, and there's HITS, and I don't know who's doing what, because there's just so many of them, and they're all over the news, but yet if you don't follow it really closely, you're going, I really don't know which is which. So we have the WEF, which is the Winter Equestrian Festival, and that's held in Wellington. So who rides at the Winter Equestrian Festival?
That one is the longest. It is 12 straight weeks of competition, which is insane. I cannot imagine competing for 12 straight weeks, but people do that. They go down and they stay for the whole time. So WEF is kind of like the cream of the crop. Like, WEF is the ultimate winter circuit competition. It's this year where the Olympic trials are going to be held. They have hunter derbies. They have, like, various multiple Grand Prix classes every single week. It's just incredible. And if you've never been, it's worth going because, first of all, there's incredible shopping. Not that I could afford anything there, but it's fun to look at least. There are often 12 rings going at once. There's a huge international arena where they have the big classes, the big hunter classes and the big jumper classes. It's just incredible. And Wellington in itself is a place like no other. So that's the biggest winter circuit. We send people down.
Now, is that's just jumpers or the dressage? And
no, it's just hunters and jumpers and equitation.
Okay.
Although this year, I think they are holding, they do those fun things, the derby crosses.
Yep.
They do at least one of those in the big ring, and I think they're doing that again this year. I'm not totally sure of the date off the top of my head, but
yeah,
that's
I think
just
actually
sort of like
we're having guests on tomorrow to talk about that.
Okay, cool. Well, you guys will find out much more than I could tell you then. But, yeah, it's pretty awesome. We send people down maybe three or four times throughout the circuit because there's so much so much awesome stuff going on. And it's where, you know, lots of people winter there because they don't want to stay in the cold northeast or anything like that. So that one, I would say, as a spectator, is the most awesome one to attend. I went a couple years ago, and I was just blown away. Just even finding my way around at first was quite difficult because it's a maze of rings and horses and grooms and people everywhere. So
and while you're there, you have to take a ride down to West Palm Beach along the ocean and take that, I forget what route it is. I don't think it's Route 1. I think it's something, called something else. But it goes down along the ocean with all the mansions, and it's just unbelievable.
Oh, I've never actually done that.
Oh, you have to do that when you're there because the mansions are out of this world that are right along
the ocean. The farms around there are just incredible, too. And it's different than, you know, here in Virginia, everyone has these farms, and they have, you know, 500 or 1,000 acres to their farm. In Wellington, maybe you have, you know, 5 or 10 acres. But these farms are just awesome.
Now, what about hits? That's held up in Ocala.
Yep, there are actually several different hit circuits. The one most people know about is the one that is in Ocala. And it's also, I mean, it's a super competition. I think that one is only 6 weeks long. And it's maybe a little bit more laid back. Sorry?
Is that jumpers too?
That one is hunters and jumpers, yep. And
how do they do both? Do they happen at the same time?
Most people don't do both.
Okay.
You either have like your WEF people or your Ocala people. Although some people will go to maybe WEF for a week and then to Ocala for a week, and then, you know, some people move around with where the hunter derbies are or where the big money Grand Prix classes are. So there's HITS Ocala. There's also HITS Arizona, which is pretty cool. It's out in Tucson. And then I think that one is just 4 weeks. No, sorry, that one's actually 6 weeks, too. That's pretty cool. And then my personal favorite is HITS Thermal, which used to be what was called, like, the Indio Circuit. It's out in the middle of the desert in California.
Where do you think Tucson is?
I guess Tucson is in the desert, too.
God.
Tucson's in the middle of the country, right? I'm just kidding.
It just happens to be closer to Phoenix than probably HITS Thermal is.
But yeah,
this whole godforsaken place out here is in the middle of the desert. Who the hell thought it was a good idea to live in Arizona was crazy. Like, go ahead. And show here? Are you kidding me? What a dumb idea.
Yeah, I mean, HITS Thermal is awesome because I've been out the last couple of years, and I go usually the last week, which is the wrap-up, which is either the first or second week of March. And it's the weather is, like, could not be more perfect. There aren't any clouds in the sky. It's between, you know, like, 75 and 80 every day. And so every time I go out there, I'm like, why don't I live here? And then the locals promptly tell me that it's 120 in July and August. So I change my tune about that. But it's another cool one to visit. Like, last year, Meredith Michaels-Bierbaum came over from Germany and actually spent the winter competing in thermal. So there's super competition out there, too. There's awesome West Coast riders like Lucy Davis last year, I think, won 5 Grand Prix out there. Again, it's hunters and jumpers as well. So that's another good one. This year, Wellington is trying to do something different with the World Dressage Festival. You guys have talked about that, I'm sure.
Yes, I think we did. And that's they're trying to we did because Totalist wasn't going to be making it this year because of his injury.
Yep, so they're trying to do a similar thing with dressage now. I think there are, like, 10 weeks of CDIs in the Wellington area between Wellington, Loxahatchee, and West Palm Beach. So that's another cool thing, too. We're not exactly sure who is going to come for that, but they're offering pretty good money. So I would venture a guess that some people will.
Well, there's no better place to be during the winter than in southern Florida around the Miami area. Weather is, like, 78 degrees and sunny. It's almost Hawaii weather that time of year. So it is very nice. Now, the only thing that'll get you is it rains. Sometimes rains a lot. I know when we've been down there in the past, we've gotten some rain. But for the most part, it's just beautiful.
Yep. It's perfect. I wish they would just relocate us every winter to Florida for maybe like 3 or 4 months. That would be nice. But we stay in Virginia and we just go on the weekends. So.
Cool. Anything else going on over at the Chronicle?
All kinds of exciting stuff. We're just wrapping up our Horses and Sport issue to go to the printer here shortly. I can't yet reveal who our Horse and Horseman of the Year are, but you will know soon.
That's a big deal every year. So you're not going to give us any clues even?
Let's see. No, I don't think so. I don't think I can. I don't think I can give you a single
one. It's not a jumper, an eventer.
It is
a
either a jumper,
versus
an eventer, or a dressage horse. I will say that. It is one of those.
Nothing. We'll have to take a guess who it's going to be this year. I think it's going to be Stephen Peters and Ravel. That's my guess.
Well, I don't know. You'll have to wait to find out.
Jamie, do you have a guess? Do you have a guess?
No, I have no guess.
Stephen Peters and Ravel, I'm going with that. That's my
that's
guess.
Where your money is?
That's not
although
a guess. That's like the given.
But you know, but Boyd Martin could be in there this year. Boyd had an awful good year. So.
It's true. Boyd did have a good year as well.
Tough. Lisa's not
all right.
I'm trying to trick her into this, but it's not working.
Nope, it's top Thanks. Secret.
All right, well, we'll look forward to that. When will that be out?
That one hits the stands on, let me make sure, January 30th. So just a couple more
weeks.
Wait
till the 30th to find out?
Yep. We're wrapping it up right now to go to the printer, and then, you know, it takes a little while for them to work their magic on it.
Shoot.
And then to go out. But, you know, one day you'll know, and I promise it'll be worth the wait.
Oh. All right, thank you, Lisa. We appreciate it. Lisa is from the Chronicle of the Horse. It's chronofhorse.com, and it's the Chronicle Report every Thursday. Have a great week, Lisa.
Thanks, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Boy, Lisa was uncharacteristically cryptic today.
I know. She wasn't giving it up. She'd get fired if she told anybody that.
Yeah, they'll probably get on her about that.
She gets fired for that. It looks like Glenn Forrester posted a picture on Facebook that was kind of funny. It wasn't gopher giving another CPR. So you better go outside and make sure that gopher isn't getting CPR by one of his buddies.
No, this one will be receiving no CPR. Well, you know what? They may do CPR on him, but there's nothing that's going to help him. Nothing's going to help him.
I got to mention to everybody before we forget, really bad ads tomorrow. So please send in your really bad ad to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com. I actually just received one in by email from somebody that sent this one in from England. She is in Yorkshire, England. And she says she loves the show. Her name is Vicky, so I'm going to be forwarding that on to Jennifer. We are giving away tomorrow a Kentucky Performance Products package here. So you're going to want to tune in to tomorrow because I will be live at Kentucky Performance Products over there in Versailles, Kentucky. We'll be bringing the show to you from there. We have a lot of fun guests tomorrow. We have with us a couple of guests, including Jessica Phoenix and Samantha, to talk about the big event coming up that we mentioned here, and that's Derby. That will be coming up, I think, on the 19th and 20th. They'll talk a little bit about that. Happened last year with the eventers and polo players and jumpers all getting together to do a fun night. So we'll hear about that. And then tomorrow we make our picks for the Eclipse Awards. It'll be Frankie, and it'll be Jamie, and it'll be myself making our picks for the Eclipse Awards, which are also coming up right around the corner. So we'll be doing all of that on tomorrow's show. A big day tomorrow. But get your really bad ads in today. Today's the deadline.
Yeah, and that's going to be a fantastic prize. I've got a story for you, Glenn. I've seen this actually on about 8 or 9 different websites, and I know you've seen it too. This woman, her name is Stephanie Noble. She is 65 years old. She is divorced, and she has a Connemara pony. Well, her Connemara pony was living on a land down the street where she was grazing. Well,
this is in England, right? This was in England. Did I get that right or not?
I think it's Scotland.
It is. It's in England. And I just am saying that for Vicky's benefit. This is one of your neighbors, Vicky. The girl just sent me the email.
Oh, okay. the lady, the horse's, the pony's name is Grey Lady Two. Grey Lady Two, apparently Stephanie had a fight with the landowner where her pony lives. And apparently at some point they got really mad and they brought the pony over, they put it on her lawn and said, basically, keep it, we're not letting it come back over. Well, Stephanie Noble couldn't figure out what to do. She tossed and turned all day Christmas, all night Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day, she decided what was going to happen. She moved all the furniture out of half of her house, and the Gray Lady 2 became her roommate. She has the horse living in her house.
Lady's nuts. Nuts.
She's already been visited by the local environmental health department, and this is in Scotland, Glenn, I'm pretty sure, because Scottish SPCA urged her to hand over the pony. She says she has the best kept pony in the north of Scotland. The pony gets to go out into the yard. She comes into the house. She's very, very happy. She says she's nice and warm every night. Which other ponies and horses are as warm as mine? She says she uses it for the bedding, cat litter, and hay.
God, can you imagine?
No. But, well, her neighbor is like, we are shocked that the environmental health or animal cruelty people have not intervened, even if it is her own home. You can't do what you want in your own home when it comes to stuff like this.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. This is crazy. She's got to be a little bit nuts.
We're talking a duplex, too. So there's somebody that lives right across the wall from that horse.
Is it duplex?
Yeah, I think that's what it said in the beginning of the article, that she had lived in a duplex. I do not think it was a single family home.
That's disgusting. Disturbing.
Yeah, now.
Now, listen to this, though. Like,
you missed the last line of the story. In another twist, Ms. Noble confirmed she has been arrested during an altercation over access to a shed for the pony. She also said she was facing an allegation of drunk driving, but was hoping to show that there were extenuating circumstances. Aren't there always?
What could be extenuating circumstances for drunk driving? I was drinking because there's no
argument. I have a pony that lives in my house.
Yeah, I have to drink that pain away. Hey, what a mess.
Speaking of England, there's another story out of England, too, and this relates to the author of War Horse. You know that War Horse was originally written as a kid's book, and Michael Marpurgo was the author of that kid's book, and he has done, apparently, he's a very, very popular kid's author in England, and he's a bestseller in many different books, and he has this series of books that he puts out that is so popular with the kids. It's called the Marpurgo's Mud Puddle Farm series. And he made a deal with McDonald's that in the Happy Meals, instead of giving away silly little toys that kids just lose anyway, that they would give away his books. So they're going to be giving away millions of copies of his books in Happy Meals in England. Well, that caused an uproar with the Anti-Fat Children Coalition, who came out and said, it's just a cynical marketing ploy to get kids to eat more hamburgers. Okay, you can look at it that way, or you can say, at least they're getting a book that they might actually read instead of a little toy in the Happy Meal that they're going to eat anyway.
Yeah, you know, I don't have kids, and I think if I did, I mean, we don't really go to fast food ever, but, you know, for some reason, children see those golden arches and freak out. I want a McDonald's! I want a McDonald's! I want a McDonald's! And as a parent, a lot of times I'm sure, you know, I'm trying to be understanding. I think it's, you know, absolute poison that you're putting in your children, but it's easy poison. It's convenient.
But they're going to do it anyway, so don't you agree that if they're going to buy them anyway, they should at least have a book instead of a toy?
And that's my point is, you know what? You might as well have some, instead of some toy they're going to choke on or you're going to step on at 3 in the morning trying to find your way to the bathroom, might as well get a book. Might as well read something. And it's the same guy that wrote War Horse, so I might just go get me a Happy Meal.
Okay, now on the other side of this story, how cool is that for an author to know that you're selling 7 million of your books like that? That's a pretty good deal.
Yeah,
not a bad deal. I don't think he's hurting because he is already a best-selling author several times over. But, yeah, definitely, you know, if McDonald's is going to do something, they might as well do that.
Right, right. All right, so that, let me see, were there any other stories?
Although
it looks
they're going to have, like, French fry grease on them, and they're going to be all nasty.
Are there any other stories we wanted to cover here before the end of the
done.
Show? You're done? Okay, then I'm done, too.
I'm going to go check my traps. I'm going to go check my traps.
Oh, yeah, I got to check your traps. All right. And, you know, because Karen posted on Facebook, and I really am concerned about the opinions of our listeners, and Karen posted on Facebook that she would really like to hear the Pasofino song. So for Karen's benefit, I will play the day out today with Pasofino. And I know Jamie can hang up and doesn't have to listen to it that way. So she won't quit. I make Karen happy. And the only one that's unhappy in that whole picture is my wife, who has to listen to it to the very end because she has to turn the show off. So I am sacrificing a happy day with my wife just for you, Karen. I'll have you know that. Just saying.
Okay, spay, neuter, and geld. Everybody have a great day. Bye. Mother loves this song. Hi, Mom.
This is for you, Mom.
I didn't even
remember the first time.
I didn't know what a
Pasofino
was. Love
it. Hi, everybody. Have a great day.
He moved like the
bear hang up.
Smooth as a mesa across the horizon. I had to have one. I wanted to ride Pasofino. Feel the power, the brio. Paka, 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 ooh. Nothing can carry me quite like you do. Paka, 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 ooh. And Largo, Pasofino. There is a rhythm no man ever taught them. Stallions, it runs in their blood. I sit in the saddle and hold a Makati. I feel the fire and I have to ride Pasofino. Hold the power, the brio. Paka, 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 paka.
Knock, knock.